It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harbell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harbell & Collins, attorneys at law, the right advice at the right time, and we welcome your calls as well, too.
Yeah, you can call me at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674.
Cecil Harbell and Wes Collins in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good
morning,
glad
Ben.
You're able to make it in okay. It's just wet and cold out
there. Not too bad down here.
Yeah, that's right. All right, what are we talking about today?
Well, last week, Ben, Andrew was here with me, and we spoke about some of the issues concerning estate administration, which is really, you know, settling the estate of a loved one who happens to no longer be with us.
Right.
There always are some legal I's to be crossed and I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed. Yeah. And, of course, we'll continue to talk about that this morning. Wes is now here. And Wes, of course, is involved so many times in estate administration. Unfortunately, when there becomes a conflict,
right,
there maybe is the need for some litigation or fiduciary litigation that's now referred to as an area of the law. Again, I think where we want to go first thing this morning, though, Ben, is that, you know, when you are the executor of the estate, you really are under a duty,
right,
to make sure that that the accountings that you file are accurate.
Mm-hmm.
You sign them under oath. You do take the oath of office as the executor, and you then are held accountable to the court system as any filings that you make. And although these filings are made at the time during the settlement of the estate, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, a year, they linger on, if you will, for many, many years to come if for any reason any of those accountings are not accurate.
Right.
And we have a file in our office right now that kind of depicts the lingering fiduciary responsibility that can exist for many years to come if for some reason those filings are not correct.
Yeah, so it's an important role that the executor takes on, no doubt.
Right. So, you know, Ben, most estate administration, you know, situations where someone has passed away and we're dealing with, you know, gathering their assets and safeguarding their accounts and their things that they've left to the next generation, they go very smoothly. And, you know, I would say that most of those, you know, folks are able to handle, if, you know, it's a relatively small estate, not any issues, maybe even without legal counsel.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be really, really careful because some of those cases do spin off into situations where, you know, we've got a real problem. It's always good, I think, to use an attorney to deal with the state administration because you can always look back to that attorney for guidance to keep you out of trouble, you know, to keep things clean, to follow the North Carolina general statutes. And I'm kind of speaking from the perspective of the guy who, like Cecil said, deals with, you know, the family issue in the estate when things go wrong.
Yeah, you're called to put out the fire.
Put out the fire. If we end up in court, we end up in court, you know, deal with those type things. But Cecil referred to a case that we're dealing with as kind of the poster child for what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a case that I'm dealing with right now. I can't use names or anything, of course, but we can talk generally about the case. This is, you know, a situation, a Carteret County estate, where a grandmother passed away and she left her assets. Well, I say grandmother because the client who contacted me was the grandson,
right,
from another state. But she left her assets to her children equally, and there were 3 children, and 2 of them served as co-administrators or co-executors of the estate. And this was like 8, 9, 10 years ago. And it was a relatively sizable estate. There was a piece of real estate that was sold for several $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, a nice little bit of 6 figures anyway in her accounts. And, you know, 8 years later, after it seemed like everything was handled appropriately, I get a call from, the grandson from another state indicating that his, you know, his mother had passed away and he had found some checks from this grandmother's estate that looked like they were never negotiated. They were never cashed. They were never deposited. So on and so forth. Sizable checks. So, you know, his first question is, well, this was 8-9 years ago. I bet we can't do anything about it.
Right.
So, of course, we look into it. We gather information. We immediately try to get bank records because you can normally, you know, as far as getting old bank records, about 6 years, 7 years, you really can't go much further than that. They just don't, they're not required to keep the records any further than that. So when you have one of these type cases where you've got to look back a long ways, the first thing to do is start getting the bank records, if you can. So.
Because the money obviously didn't leave the estate if they weren't cashed, right?
That's what you would think.
All right.
We knew at that point in time, once we saw these checks, we knew that either maybe there was another check that was that was cut for that because maybe these checks were just lost by the mother. And by the way, the mother of the grandson who passed away or the grandson who contacted me had passed away. So this mother had just passed away. Her son was going through her documentation and found these checks. So long story short with regard to that is that once we did our investigation, looked at everything, we found a lot of problems, and all problems that if legal counsel was involved in the administration would not have taken place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of the things that we found. We eventually got bank statements, and we were able to cross-check the bank statements for the estate account with what was reported to the court. They didn't match up at all. Okay? There were multiple checks that, as recorded with the clerk of court, it indicated they were 0.0 for void.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take that same check number and you line it up with the check number on the account statement, and it was, you know, several tens or 25,000 or 30,000 or, you know, numbers like this. So we were able to determine because of that and because of some other things that this mother, who should have received a third of the estate because there were two other children, did not.
Right.
And we were also able to learn that what happened were the two co-executors helped themselves to an additional, basically, a third of the estate because it didn't seem that anyone was paying attention to what was going on.
Right.
Apparently, you know, and again, the knee-jerk reaction for me when the call comes in from this grandson, you know, down in a different state, that you know, that we found these checks and they're worth, you know, they're a lot. What happened? I don't know because I can't talk to my mother. She's deceased.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, either one of two things happened. I mean, either your mother was really asleep at the wheel here.
Right.
or this was fixed in some way. We just don't know about it. And what we learned was that during the administration of this grandmother's estate, what happened was the mother, as I've referred to, one of her other children died during that. So she was very depressed. She was very much consumed with that, and she didn't really care about, you know, the money and the administration of the estate. She just left it to her brother and sister. You guys handle it. I'm too stressed. Well, they handled it all right. They handled it to help themselves. Now, what's very important for listeners to recognize here is that North Carolina really does not limit one's rights to come back even after a very long period of time to question these type things. You can come back and in the event an accounting that is given to the court is inaccurate, there is no statute of limitations on that. You can always come back at any point in time if you can prove that. Now, it becomes more and more difficult to prove as time goes on because you have to get those bank records I was referring to.
Right. Well, let me ask you a question just on this, again, in generalities. The mother had one son one child who had deceased.
That's correct.
And then the other son.
Right.
Any other children in there, too?
No.
Because that, you know, complicated as well, I would imagine, going down the tree a little bit, so to speak.
That's right. So folks listening need to recognize that although, you know, you may feel as though no one is watching what you're doing, no one is going to go back and check the bank records against what I file with the court. You know, I can, you know, maybe be a little bit casual with regard to this, and if I get a little bit more, that's okay. That's not okay at all. that, you know, the moral of the story here is, you know, here I am 8-10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
These issues have now been brought to me. I'm able to prove what happened. And those co-administrators or co-executors of the estate are jointly responsible, you know, for that. And not only are they responsible for the damages, they're responsible for interest on the amount that should have been received by the deceased mother, and potentially responsible for punitive damages in the event that we can show that their actions were intentional, which I think there obviously were.
Well, as we take a break, I would imagine that one of the lessons there, too, because we've talked about this before, is that you can, that executors can't assume that they have all the power.
I mean, absolutely, right. Okay. We hear that all the time.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll come back to that, too, in just a moment here on Coastal Daybreak, and let's talk legal with Harvell & Collins. You can go online at harvellandcollins.com to find out a lot of great information about them, and also give them a call at 252-726-9050, and we'll have more, including your calls are welcome, too, in just a moment. And we're back with Cecil and Wes, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, and also taking your questions at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674 on this frosty, cold, and wet morning around here. If you would, I'd like to call in and ask your questions as well. And we were, as we ended that, we were talking about executors assuming too much power.
And an executor, as we've said here on the program before, Ben, is a fiduciary. A fiduciary is anyone who holds monies on behalf of another. It can be through a power of attorney, as attorney in fact, can be as the trustee under a trust, it can be the executor under a will. If there is no will, then the terminology changes ever so slightly to administrator of the estate. All of these folks are fiduciaries, and they have a heightened obligation to handle the funds of the estate in a very careful way, because after all, they are not their funds. They are the funds of another. So, Ben, it is true that once these accountings are made, they can be reviewed, they can be looked at, estates can be reopened, there can be inquiries, many years after, if there are circumstances such as Wes is referring to, in this file's a little unusual, but again, it's just an example of the fact that we do see executors at times who are maybe strong-arming the other beneficiaries a bit, exerting a little bit of heavy influence, if you will, and we really do sometimes have to back away a bit and talk to the executor about the fact that they definitely have a duty to act in what's the best interest of all that are concerned.
Mandy has a question that has to, from a caller, needs to remain anonymous.
Sure.
Yeah, just a couple of questions here. When a will is drawn up, does it then need to be registered, or what's the steps to make sure that gets done right? And then how long after someone's death does it take, does it have to be executed, or does it have to be executed at all?
Those are great questions. Okay, the first question, a will that's drawn up, that's signed, has been properly witnessed. Hopefully the witnesses have signed in the presence of a notary, which makes that document self-proving, self-authenticating. There is then no necessity whatsoever at that time that the will be recorded. In fact, the will cannot be recorded per se because there has not been a death. It is true that the clerks of court have a vault system where they will take a will and hold it for self-keeping, okay? And they give you a receipt that they are holding your will in their filing systems, in their safekeeping filing systems for to be recorded at a later date.
Right.
Now, we don't particularly recommend that someone put their will in that safekeeping system, because then if ever you want to make a change or if there's any modification, then you are going to need to go and retrieve that will and get it back into your filing system and then, of course, you know, go from there. So we suggest that the original wills be kept in a safe place, a vault system, your own private system, or in the vault system of your lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine for them to be kept in a safety deposit box. It used to be a bit burdensome to get to the box.
Right. It's
after
less
death,
so now.
But it's not so now. It's very easy to get into mm-hmm. the safety deposit box. And that you more or less control the location, if you will, and easy access to the original of your documents.
Okay.
Okay.
And the other question is about the executing the will.
How long after death does it need for the will to be executed, and then does it is it required that it be executed?
Yeah. Well, the word executed is a little bit of a we're not quite square there in our language, but hey, that's okay.
Okay.
Executed, of course, means signing,
mm-hmm.
and you know, under the notary requirement, the witnesses, the testator signing the will, all of that is many times called, you know, the way in which the will was executed. What the question is talking about is, now someone has died.
Mm-hmm.
How long do we have to put that will on record?
Right.
And what is the what are the requirements there? Does the will even have to go on record? What if you hold on to original will and you just don't take it to the county courthouse?
Yes.
Okay. All of those kinds of questions, I think, is
mm-hmm.
what
exactly.
is kind of being asked. Well, you know, those are also some very good questions. The first one is that, believe it or not, there is no time limit
mm-hmm.
on the filing of an original will in terms of, you know, you can find a will, three or four years later
mm-hmm.
and at that point file it. Maybe the estate even got administered according to statute, if mm-hmm. you will,
right.
because they thought there was no will.
Mm-hmm.
And then you locate a will. Well, now the will can be filed. So so there isn't a time limit on when an original will can finally make its way to the clerk's office and into the court system to then become a legally operative.
Right.
In terms of the requirement.
Determining whether or not that's original will is another story. Yeah.
Correct. But we do have that happen,
mm-hmm.
not usually several years, but mm-hmm. But we many times will... not many times, but it happens, you know, fairly often that we will open up an estate according to administration because
mm-hmm.
we cannot find a will. Okay,
right.
We do not think there is a will. And then at some point, lo and behold, someone is clearing out the property at the house or whatever the case might be, and they find an original will.
But the other part of that question was, do you even have to do that?
Well, you do.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a legal document and an original will, then you're under an affirmative duty to file that document.
Mm-hmm.
Take it to a lawyer, take it to the courthouse. You don't have to understand what it's saying. You don't have to necessarily you're not required
mm-hmm.
to qualify as the executor if you're named in the document as the executor. But to hold back
right.
an original document.
Okay.
And or to destroy it then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To not file it, to not bring it forward.
That's a criminal act.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. We have Doug standing by. Newbern, Doug, hold on. We're going to have a very short break and be back with Harvell and Collins in just a moment. The law is increasingly complex, and the growing staff of Harvell & Collins stands ready to untangle your legal challenges. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, along with associates Russell Alexander and Andrew Foster, practicing in all areas of civil practice, including estate planning, elder law and asset protection, collections and foreclosures, and also civil trial practice in these and all other civil matters. Call to arrange your free initial consultation at 252-726-9050. Plus, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins answer your questions live each Tuesday morning at 7:30 on Let's Talk Legal. Tune into Coastal Daybreak Tuesday mornings at 7:30 on the talk station and call in with your legal questions.
If an LLC has kind of a mixed bag of properties, commercial, residential, unimproved, at what point do you have too much within one LLC, and how do you then split them off into a second or a third LLC?
If it's your question, it's important to Harbell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City. All right, welcome back again to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Let's talk to Doug in Newbern now. Hi, Doug.
Good more and appreciate this segment.
Yes.
Look, on a will, you talking about strong-arm executors. I'm an executor of a will right now. What happens if you've got people that are one of the people that has been left things that will not respond to you? Can you tell me the process and what you got to go through for that, dealing with real estate and monies?
Yeah. Doug, I can relate. You know, it's amazing. You know, it's interesting, you know, when folks just won't respond.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now we start communicating with them in some sort of certified letter format, so that we can at least show that there's been the effort to communicate with them. Keep in mind, if we have an address and we send a letter certified and the receipt is sent back, even though they did not receive it, even though they didn't sign for it, you see, we have attempted to communicate at that point, and we then, you know, are kind of off the hook, if
right.
you will.
Right.
You do want to make sure that to the best you can that your address is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But if we send out a letter to a beneficiary certified mail communicating and they still will not receive the letter,
mm-hmm.
then at least we have evidence of the fact that on this occasion, maybe even a second occasion, we attempted to communicate with them, and that they would not receive the mail for whatever reason. Now, beyond that, Doug, it really is on a case-by-case basis, and just kind of we would have to kind of hear a little bit more about what the nature of the assets are and what exactly you're needing to communicate to them about.
Yeah.
It might be that as to real estate, for instance, that you could, within the context of the estate proceeding, get an order that or get a title company to agree that you'd be able to transfer the title to the
right.
property per the will without necessarily the signature of maybe one of the beneficiaries who's not communicating. Get an order of the court to sell the property
right.
as executor because you're unable to get the signature of one of the beneficiaries. That might help us with regard to real estate.
Yeah, again, it depends on the individual case.
Doug, I'll be glad to, I know we're out of time. I see that, and Ben is over here frantically waving his hand. You're welcome to give me a call at the office, and I will try to talk it through a little bit more with you.
Can anyone who possesses an original will take it to the courthouse, or does it
yes.
need to be the executor?
Yes.
Anybody can.
Anybody.
Okay. Uh-huh. That was another question standing by there. All right, again, now find out more from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law.